the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering Arizona Cardinals, as we have been for the last 10 years on this show, episode 459, and we are officially wrapping up the end of week one prep as the Arizona Cardinals will open the season on the road against the Washington Commanders, something we haven't done in a really long time, and I think in this, back since I changed the name of the show because I changed networks. I was with SB Nation before when we had Revenge of the Birds Radio. Those of you might remember that way back in the day I was doing the podcast. But I haven't done a weekly opponent guest or interview in quite some time. And that's what we have for this first week of the season. And he's officially a friend of the show because he was on not too long ago for the season opponent previews. It's Brian Manning from CommandersWire.com, the sister site on the NFL Wire covering the Washington Commanders. Brian, welcome back to the show. It hasn't been too terribly long, but now we know more about the teams that we cover.
First of all, thanks for the invite, Jess. Glad to be back. And yes, sir, as we both have been preparing for our season opener, you know, we had that chat here recently, and it's allowed both of us to know a little bit more about each other's teams, especially with your quarterback situation heading into week one.
Absolutely. Let's kind of jump right into this. The biggest thing, and I want to know, because it's not something we felt on this side of it, not having been in the NFC East for over 20 years, and Washington is not a team we face regularly now, but the change in ownership, officially announced as a sellout, the season opener, new ownership. What is the how long had it been since the stadium sold out? One, and two, what is the feeling or the vibe surrounding the team now that there's new ownership? Has anything changed within the building itself? I know the fans are clearly much more excited about this new era, but does that permeate into the locker room at all?
Yeah, I think the first when I look at Ron Rivera on the first day of training camp, when he looked relaxed, refreshed, smiling. I think the last few years had kind of gotten him down a little bit. And I don't know if it was the losing or the mediocre record or whatever, or you know, dealing with all the questions that didn't relate to football. And I've been critical of Rivera's as a coach at times, but I feel for the man for what he's had to deal with. As you know, I've often said that he may not be the coach that leads Washington to being a perennial playoff team, but he was the absolute perfect coach at the perfect time in 2020 in the last years, because he's a heck of a leader. But he's been excited, and if you talk, they've asked the players, you know, I've seen many players just they're smiling when talking about it, because they see the fans. They see a 10,000-12,000 fans at training camp practice. They see bleachers at training camp practice. It's a big deal. I mean, it doesn't seem a big deal to the rest of the NFL teams, but it's a big deal because the past owner was cheap. I'm just going to call it that. But and so they see it. They're excited. They're excited for that first game because they know it's going to be a packed house. It's going to be all Washington fans for the most part. And they were tired of coming in for their team for a home game and seeing 50% blue jerseys or 50% green jerseys. So everybody's excited. And you mentioned the fans. I mean, the fans, it's been an almost 2-month party since July 20th. I mean, it's been crazy. And it's, unless you've had an owner like Daniel Snyder, and I know there are not many of them because he's that bad and that horrible, but
people here would lump Michael Bidwill into that same category. I know the problems or the reputation is far different than the type of culture that was in the building there, because we're talking, you know, harassment, inappropriate type of thing. And here it's just, he's kind of an a-hole, apparently, to people. He's harder than he should be, and the Bidwills have a reputation of being cheap. That's a different story, but
yeah.
What y'all went through with the kind of that cloud over the organization, does it feel like kind of like a new day?
Yeah, it's like, you know, I've said this more than once. It's like I felt like over the past couple of years, I became like a court reporter almost. Like every day.
You never want to do that. Like back when the lockout, reporting on lockout stuff back in, that was the absolute worst. Like, just let's talk about football.
Exactly. And you have to be so careful about what you say, because when you're covering Snyder, he will get his lawyers after you. That's not a joke. Because you know, we would get if we said something, not that we said anything wrong, but it would be a lawyer statement. Please add this to your story. Please add this to your story, because they wanted their side in the story. So, you know, you had to mind your P's and Q's and source everything correctly. And it was always something. So once the sale agreement became final back in like May, we could finally see the finish line. So it's been great because it's all been on football, and that's what we all want.
Well, now Washington, the Commanders, the Cardinals, two last place teams from last year, and largely are expected to be last place teams this year in their division, although at different levels of performance. Let's start with the quarterback. They named, you know, after a competition between Sam Howell and Jacoby Brissett. I guess early in the offseason, I thought that Brissett might be the guy to win the job. But tell us, Sam Howell, is he ready? And what is, and the fact that he was named a captain, I think, does say something. But what is the optimism? What is kind of the hope that Sam Howell can be as a starter in year two, and when he got one game of experience a year ago?
I went back to Sam Howell's time at North Carolina. See, I'm a Virginia Tech guy, so I saw a lot of Sam Howell at North Carolina. So I was always a fan of Sam, and I bought into the hype when he was a sophomore that this is a top 10, top 15 pick, because he could make all the throws. He was so much better of an athlete than he got credit for. Then in his final season in 2021, I believe it was, he lost his top three receivers, top two running backs, all the NFL. There was more an onus on him to carry the offense. He had a bad offensive line. His numbers suffered. And as the season wore on, he became more of a running back at the under center than he was a passer. So it dropped his stock. He's not the biggest guy. Like, he's not small, but he's not, you know, he's not the statuesque 6'5", 235-pound guy that teams want. But so there was a lot of reasons that knocked him. But, you know, he had some mechanical issues because he was an RPO guy a lot. So, you know, he stayed in shotgun so much. And so there were some issues there, but he worked all offseason with once he met Eric Bieniemy, he worked with his personal quarterback coach on the offense, syncing his footwork up with the offense, you know, just the little things. And Eric Bieniemy has been extremely, you know, praised him so much because he likes the fact that Sam doesn't repeat mistakes. You know, he'll make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, but Sam will make mistakes. He'll make multiple mistakes, but he's not going to make the mistake again. Like, he would take a sack in the preseason week one game, the next play or two plays later, he connected on a huge third and 13 play. Then in the second game, he was a fourth and three, and he just rolled out to his right, went through his progressions, made a great play on the move. Just a lot of things tell you he's ready. Will there be lumps, bumps, and all that? Sure there will. You know, he's going to make mistakes. He's going to have bad games. But if they stay committed to him, you know, and ride this out, I believe he can be the future quarterback. Now, when you hear some fans are so desperate for a good quarterback in Washington that they're going to anoint him as a top five guy, and that's silly because he's not. But if you maintain some sense of realism and while maintaining the optimism you have for him, there's a good chance he can be really good. And they have a good supporting cast. You know, I worry about the offensive line, especially the offensive tackles, but I think optimism's high on Sam Howell, and I believe it's warranted.
So I've seen two different, very different things. I believe it was Doug Farrar over Touchdown Wire, but was one of the Touchdown Wire, right? And kind of predicted Howell be kind of a breakout player of the year type guy. And then you see the ESPN projections from Mike Clay saying that Washington's going to have the worst offense in the NFL. Which is closer to the truth, do you think?
I'm going to side with Doug. I know Doug's been high on Sam the whole time, like we have. And I'm not that the whole thing with that projection, I laughed, and a lot of our readers laughed at it because, you know, I think some of our readers laughed and said, "Oh, he's stupid. They're going to be a top five offense." So let's not get carried away. But they're not going to be the worst. I would, you know, we talked about wagering earlier. I would put anything that they're not the lowest scoring team at the end of the year. Now, Sunday's game, it may be a snooze fest. It may be ugly because it's first game, both teams. You know, you have a new era, a new coaching staff, and, you know, breaking a new quarterback. And it may be ugly on Washington's end. But as the season wears on, this offense is going to end up being solid. The weapons, if Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, Curtis Samuel, those guys stay healthy, what a heck of a group of playmakers for Sam Howell. And
that's not even including Logan Thomas, who's no slouch.
And then they have Cole Turner, a second-year tight end. So he's basically a big receiver. Sam's got a lot of confidence in him. I'm a big fan of him. And the fourth receiver is Diami Brown, who had 2 1,000-yard seasons with Sam Howell at UNC. Diami's a deep guy. It's going to be a solid offense, and it so much depends on Howell. You know, and I get the skepticism nationally that they're willing to rate Washington low until Howell proves it, and I get that. I mean, saying they're going to be the worst offense, I think, silly. It's clickbait to me, but I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But now I think they're going to be pretty good. But Bienemy is going to do things to get the ball in their hands. He's going to do things where Sam's not holding the ball for 3 and 4 seconds, like the shorter stuff. Get the ball in Terry's hands. Get the ball in Jahan's or Curtis's hands quick. Let him run after the catch. Those are things that the previous offensive coordinator didn't do. It was long developing stuff. Let's get the ball into your playmakers' hands and let them work. And Sam is good about setting guys up for yards after the catch. So there's a lot of reason for optimism there. And like you mentioned, Logan Thomas, and Logan's healthy and they took it easy on him. And Logan's a big target. I think you know Logan pretty well.
He was a quarterback here and not very good. He was not a good quarterback.
You know, I covered his time at Virginia Tech, and I remember him coming out of high school, and if he could have been a tight end, he was supposed to be a tight end at Virginia Tech. Yeah. And if he could have stayed at tight end, this guy would have made millions upon millions of dollars because he had the natural ability to be a great tight end. And the thing was, he was a pretty good college quarterback.
He was. And I remember when they drafted him, is that, you know, he has franchise quarterback potential with the size, the athleticism, just the dynamic arm
strength.
Oh my gosh.
And he was just at the time. They missed the top guy they wanted. See, they had Tyrod Taylor as quarterback. They already had a really good quarterback. They missed the guy they wanted. So it's like, hey, Logan, we need you to play quarterback. So when Logan played quarterback, he never left. And it's really sad because, I believe he would have been a first-round pick at tight end. I think he would have been that good. And he took to the position late in the NFL. And, I mean, look, he's been, outside of injury, he's been a really good tight end.
He has been. He's been pretty dang solid. Coming up next on the Rise Up Series podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk a little bit more about the Washington Commanders, offensive coordinator, matchups, and the like. That's coming up next on Rise Up Series. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Brian Manning from CommandersWire.com. Eric Bieniemy, new offensive coordinator. How different is the offense that he brings with him than what was in Washington previously?
The enemy's going to bring that West Coast style offense that you see what Andy Reid does a lot of, and the quick stuff and some of the movement. That's what he's going to do. Whereas the previous offense was a lot of play action, try to hit stuff deep. And the enemy's not going to be afraid to take deep shots, but it's going to be more quarterback friendly. This offense will be. And when you have a young quarterback, you want an offense that's more quarterback friendly. So the enemy has a lot to prove. That's why I think him and Sam Howell and Ron Rivera, they're like the three perfect matches for each other because they all have so much to prove. Rivera needs Bieniemy to save his job, quite frankly, and because with a new owner especially. But, you know, and he may even – there's rumors here that he may be the guy to replace Rivera. I mean, we're away from that. We're a ways away from that. But then you have Howell, who's – I mean, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. There's a lot of we're going to find out who Eric Bieniemy is this year, and I think that's a good thing. I think he's a pretty darn good coach, and the early indications are it's the little things. The offense looks so much better, and it's just that he he caters the offense to the skills of his players, and that's not what happened before. It's amazing that Terry McLaurin had 1,000-yard seasons with trash quarterbacks and horrible offensive structure. I mean, it really was, and it's a testament to how good Terry McLaurin is.
If we look at now, I want to talk just starters. The preseason is hard to gauge anything, but with that, based on what you saw from the starting offense and starting defense, what did you learn about the 2023 version of the Commanders? As much as you can learn from preseason snaps from the starters.
You're right. The preseason is so overrated. The Washington went 3-0, and nobody takes that serious. I mean, because
the Cardinals had, I remember, 4-0 preseason seasons when they won four games the rest of the year.
And I get fans being excited. I mean, because the Washington fans deserve something to cheer for. And if it's a 3-0 preseason, leave us alone, you know? No, but in all seriousness, I saw the Ravens, you know, they were butthurt over that that winning streak. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, they were literally crying about it on their fans, and so they were really upset over that streak. And, you know, Washington went up and had 2 days of practice with them. This is where I gauge – this is how I answer your question. Washington went up and had 2 days of practice with the Ravens. The Ravens are a first-class organization, and by all accounts, Washington held their own in some fashions. Washington got the better of those practices. You know, you're going to hear both sides, but I'm confident in saying Washington held their own. And in years past, if those two teams would have had a joint practice, the professionalism from one side or the other would have been evident. Like, this team doesn't belong on the field with this team. That wasn't the case this summer, and that's a positive sign. Sam Howell had a good practices and a good performance against their defenses. Like, I know in the preseason game, they didn't really play any starters. Baltimore didn't, but Sam was, like, he was outside of the sack. One of the sacks he took, he was almost perfect in that game, precision with his receivers. But as far as the defense goes, everybody's so low on the offense and they're hyping up Washington's going to be top five defense. I've seen enough over the years to know we're going to be disappointing this defense. As good as Jonathan Allen and De'Ron Payne and Montez Sweat are, and trust me, I'm telling you, they are awesome. And we're still waiting on Chase Young from 2020. And we're 3 years in, 3 years past that now. And then there's the safeties, man. I love the safeties, Cameron Curl, Derek Forrest, Percy Butler, the corners, but the linebackers are dreadful. And you get Jamin Davis has potential to be good, but I just think, when I say we're going to be disappointed defense, I'm not saying we're going to be we're looking at a top bottom five defense, but I think the projections of top five are going to be too high. I think this ends up being a top 12, top 14 defense, which if the offense improves to 16th, 18th,
that might be,
that's going to balance itself out.
Yeah.
And you're going to be a 8-9 win team, which is what I see this team being eventually anyway, somewhere in the 7-9 win range.
So as we look at the Cardinals and Commanders, where are the matchups that you, what are the most intriguing matchups for you individually or positionally? And are there anyone, is there any particular matchup that, and I know perception, you know, the perception of the Cardinals is there probably aren't many matchups that worry other teams while Kyler Murray's out, but what matchups are you excited to see? And is there any particular matchup that you worry about against Arizona?
I want to see your offensive line. I don't know. I don't have an insider perspective because I think it's going to be interesting to see. I'm a big fan of Paris Johnson. I liked him coming out. I want to see how he holds up against what I believe will be Montez Sweat for the most part. That'll be a tough test for Paris Johnson, but I want to see how he holds up, and I think he has a chance to have a really good career. Defensively, obviously, I'm a fan of Buda Baker. I'm sure you guys are too. I don't know exactly what, you know. I'm anxious to see him play. And as far as the skill talent that you guys have, I'm not too familiar with a lot of the matchups with the skill players.
Okay, offensively, they're not terrible. Hollywood Brown, he showed he could be a number one receiver. Zach Ertz, if he's out there, like you've know Zach Ertz from his time with the
Eagles. We're very familiar with Zach Ertz.
James Conner, he's an average to above average starting running back. But then you had
nose for the end zone.
Yes. Josh Dobbs. When you get Josh Dobbs at quarterback, that kind of changes the whole outlook. Defensively, the Cardinals are going to be interesting. But I will say this. I know it's as tough a matchup as you can have early on, but it will test the Cardinals' offensive line, which four out of the five positions you feel pretty good at. And the center's a big question mark because it's a guy named Yelda Froholt. He started four games for the Browns last year. I think it was six games, but he started four at center. And he's never been a starter before. He's been a replacement guy, but he's been pretty dang good all offseason. DJ Humphries, good left tackle. Paris Johnson, promising tackle. Will Hernandez, a really good guard, a mauler. Elijah Wilkinson played for the Falcons, pretty solid. And then the question mark is how does Froholt hold up? And that's as tough a test as they're going to have early on in the season is against that defensive front. I'm intrigued to see how they hold up because if that defense overpowers significantly what the Cardinals do offensively, then I think it could be an ugly game. But I don't think that will be the case personally.
How do you feel about your edge rushers?
They are, I don't know, because Zaven Collins, former first rounder, he was playing off ball before. So he's got the size and athleticism to come off the edge, and he's really strong. They got second round pick B.J. Ojulari, only played a handful of snaps in the preseason, but you know, he was, outside of Will Anderson, was the most productive, not sack-wise, but overall pressure-wise, pass rusher in the country over the last 2 years. Cameron Thomas, third-round pick a year ago, was the most productive overall pressure producer in college football his last year of college, and so there's some promise there. But they're not proven in the NFL, and so it's hopeful.
That's an area where I think the Cardinals can exploit Washington because there are questions about Washington's offensive tackles. Now, the guards, there's questions about the guards because both guards are former draft picks as offensive tackles. Sam Cosmi, he'll be playing right guard in 2021, was a second-round pick at right tackle. They've moved him inside because he has trouble with that. He had trouble with guys off the edge, but inside playing inside, he mauls people, and he's got the athleticism to get out and pull. And as far as Sadiq Charles is, they've just been waiting on him to be healthy. And, you know, Mark Schlereth, who's obviously works for Fox now, a longtime former player, played for Washington. He's been a big fan of Sadiq Charles. So I feel pretty good about the guards, but the tackles, that's an area that Arizona could exploit. I think you're going to learn a little bit about your edge rushers on Sunday.
That's good. That's fantastic. I'm particularly intrigued with the number one matchup because it looks like McLaurin's going to play. He was a full participant in practice on Thursday, so it would appear that he's trending towards playing this weekend. Marco Wilson, who is the Cardinals' number one corner, 2 years ago was a fourth-round pick out of Florida. Athleticism, like he has like first-round draft pick athletic traits. His freshman year at Florida was out of this world. If the college football, remember the cornerback who threw the foot, took the guy's foot? That was Marco Wilson.
I was watching that game. Yeah.
That was Marco Wilson. He's been he's had ups and downs, but he's now kind of the default number one. I'm really intrigued to see how that matchup works out one-on-one and how the Cardinals decide to help if they feel they need to help him.
Against that's a
McLaurin.
Huge test for him.
That's intriguing. And then just overall, that whole defensive front, you know, there's no way that they're going to – I seriously doubt that Washington's going to respect the passing game the Cardinals have. They will probably key in on James Conner, and I'm interested to see how the offensive line holds up, how the running game can hold up. To at least if they can get some push to create anything in the passing game, because that's going to be interesting. Let's let's move on from that. So coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best Hour of Cardinals Talk and Love, let's talk predictions. What is what we expect, best case, worst case scenario? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best Hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web with Brian Manning of CommandersWire.com. Let's look into this because I'll say this. Sam Howell, while there's he reminds me of lots of other quarterbacks, but he does have slightly more athleticism. He did have the tape before that. But I see a slightly undersized quarterback that's probably going to hurt himself, the type of style of play that he has. That said, I think this game is going to be a sludge fest. Because I think the Cardinals offense is not going to do much. And I have mild optimism for this defense. On paper, it doesn't look good. In fact, that same projection from ESPN's Mike Clay that had the Commanders as the lowest scoring offense in the NFL, averaging 18.2 a game, they had the Cardinals as the third worst scoring defense, given a 458 points on the season. But it comes out to 27 point something points a game, I believe.
So this is like according to Mike Clay, this is like the perfect matchup.
It's like, which is it? Is it a bad defense or is it a good offense? But I will say this, when the defensive starters were in the game, there were only a handful of series in the first two preseason games. The starting defense didn't give up any points. They only allowed 17 yards to the Chiefs. That's not something you can generally sustain throughout a whole game, but I feel that if the offense doesn't make mistakes, I don't think they're going to score a lot of points, but if they don't give the ball away, that the defense will be able to keep it close. Yeah, I personally am expecting, and if you saw my on Thursday's network listicle that we wrote for the best bets for each game, I'm hammering the under on this game. It's already the lowest projected total of all 16 NFL games this week at 38 points. And I'm saying I'm like 16, 10, 17, 13 is what I'm thinking.
And I would definitely agree with you on the under. The under is happening this week. Now, as far as my prediction, and you know, I don't know, seeing the excitement around the team in FedEx Field with the new owners, John Riggins is coming back for this game. Magic Johnson's going to be there. The excitement that's going to be there, I think that's going to carry on to the field. I believe Washington, I think they're going to score 24 points in this game. I don't know how many they're going to give up. I think it's going to be something like a 24-13 game. That's kind of my projection. And you know, look, I'm wrong at this all the time. So this is just
no,
me.
No, you don't have to feel bad about making that side of prediction. Like my co-host Seth Cox, who is also the SB Nation writer, he did his write-up with Hogs Haven's guy, and he said, oh, 31-7. and it, you know, I could see where it could go though. I could see the Cardinals getting hammered from start to finish, but I do believe in I have this slight belief in the Cardinals defense and perhaps it's just not enough belief in Washington's offense yet.
That's a reasonable take, honestly, because over the years, if you've covered Washington, been a fan of Washington, whatever, you've never seen hopes this high, because there's the hopes this high are more than just football, more than just the right. On-field product right. In 2023.
It's not like the fans are thinking this team's winning the division. They're just happy that, you know, they're happy they're free of Daniel Snyder. Yeah. And then from there, they're hoping to the optimism of what's happening will kick in.
Most fans view this season, they've already won. And so they go 6-11. They're going to be mad. It's going to be a sad time to go 6-11, 5-12 again. But expects to
be
coach.
They'll be 8-9 because that's Ron Rivera is a modern day Jeff Fisher.
He's Jeff. Yeah. I've called him that. And I'm glad you see that too, because it's like Jeff Fisher has been replaced as the 8-8 guy. I know there's no more 8-8.
Well, in fairness, but when his teams like in the NFC South, that was good enough to win divisions.
If his first year Washington, he went 7-9 and won the division.
Yeah. And so, like, what can you do about that? Like, your number one job is win the division. If you can win the division, it doesn't really matter because that means you're definitely in the postseason.
And, well, they got in the playoffs that year at 7-9. They were pretty. They were playing such good ball that year, and they had. All due respect to Alex Smith, they didn't have good quarterback play, but Alex, there's just something about him. There's just this, he's leadership, and he was clutch. I mean, he was clutch. He just wasn't, you know, and this was before he ever was hurt and after he came back. You know, his story is amazing. How can you not love Alex Smith? But they didn't have great quarterback play, and they just seemed to make plays. The defense made plays. I mean, the receivers would step up and make plays. That team was fun. And then when they got into the playoffs, they took Tampa Bay, who won the Super Bowl that year. They took them to the limit with a guy who came off, signed off the couch at quarterback. I mean, it was something else.
Did Heinicke do that game?
Yeah, that was Heinicke.
Oh,
because
Heinicke's so fun. Gosh, what a quarterback to have who's like, you know, he's not good, but they do well when he's in the game.
Here's the take. Heinicke, if you follow Washington enough, you know that whoever's a quarterback, it's a 50-50 split. Fans hate him. It's been going back to – that goes back to the 70s with Sonny Jurgensen and Billy Kilmer, which was way before my time. But as far as, you know, it really has been bad since Robert Griffin and Kirk Cousins because there's still fans that think Robert Griffin's good. He wasn't. I mean, he was that rookie year.
Oh,
but
my gosh. One fear I have about Kyler. What if he RG3s?
Yeah. And Kirk, I mean, everybody saw, you know, Kirk takes a lot of crap, man. And I think a lot of it's unwarranted.
He's
not a bad player.
Mid good quarterback.
Yeah, that's a perfect description. He's not a winner, but he's not a loser. And he puts up numbers. And he, I mean, that game when he came back to FedEx Field last year, he was, Daron Payne was laying him. He was hitting him in the ribs, and Kirk was taking his shots and hitting dimes down the field. I mean, it was.
You watch him, he's like, is he a good quarterback? But then you look at his ear, like, he's a good quarterback. And then you watch him play, is he a good quarterback?
Yeah, that's the perfect. And you know, and the fans that hate Kirk, which I don't get. I don't get why people hate him. Social media wants to make everything personal, and I don't get it. But with Kirk, it's like, I bet you'd love to have Kirk back, whether you want to admit it or not. Over the past 5 years, you'd love to have Kirk with some of the defensive play you've had over the past 5 years. Of course, if you had Kirk, you couldn't pay those defensive guys. But, you know, it's the quarterback debate is always ongoing. It's crazy. And it's just I guess it's probably not just a Washington thing, but it sure feels like it.
that whole time was interesting. But, yeah, absolutely. So, the Commanders are 7-point favors, and favorites, and it sounds like you think that they will be good enough. And normally, you know, I do like especially in a home opener, I like the juice that a home crowd can give an underdog or a favorite in either direction. And so you've got them winning 24-13, where that they would both win, cover, and still hit the under. Even with 24 points, that's still a pretty productive offensive day with your defense doing what it does and against what is expected to be a barely passable offense for the Cardinals. I'm not super optimistic about this with Josh Dobbs. And it's not like Colt McCoy was doing good things. I just think Colt McCoy, even at his – apparently he was – Jonathan Gannon, who doesn't say bad things about players, basically came out and said Colt was washed up because he ran the first-team offense all offseason. And then it's like – and Gannon came out when they cut him, and they're paying him $2.25 million to stay at home because that's guaranteed salary. He said, you know, it wasn't anything to do with what – Colt didn't show us. He showed us everything that he had, and it wasn't good enough. And so they went and traded for Josh Dobbs, who has 2 starts in 6 seasons. I'm expecting best case scenario with Dobbs is that the Cardinals look offensively the way the Seahawks did 2 years ago with Geno Smith at quarterback for those 3 games. Not the last year Geno Smith when he was fantastic, but the one that the offense was barely hanging on. And my hope is that the defense is better, is scrappier, and can keep things close. I have the Cardinals covering, but it won't be a pretty game. I haven't decided whether I'm going to say 17-13 or 16-10 is kind of my pick. Still reaches within that 7-point spread where I can give the Cardinals the cover and definitely the overhitting. But I'm super intrigued to how this goes. I'm not super optimistic about the Cardinals' prospects in the meantime because Dobbs might know the offense, but he's definitely not a playmaker. And it's just a matter is how well does he manage the game? Like, can the offense do anything at all? And if at least at minimum, avoid mistakes and please make a couple of plays. Yeah. I'm hoping.
Yeah.
But that's so we've got 23-14 is the prediction from Brian. 16-10 loss for the Cardinals from my end, or 17-13, like one of those two. It's basically the same thing. But that wraps up this edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. You can catch Brian Manning's work on Commander's Wire, one of our sister sites. You can also catch the write-up that we do with predictions and questions that we did about this game. And some of that stuff we talked about during the show, but you'll be able to see it in written form. Brian, is there anywhere else that other than just Commander's Wire, if I want to sick my Cardinals fans on you on social media, where can they hit you at?
They can find me on Twitter at Brian, B-R-Y-A-N-D, Manning, M-A-N-N-I-N-G.
Awesome. And I guess that's technically, it's X, formerly known as, I don't know. I can't do that.
Yeah.
It's still Twitter to me, man. Brian, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the time. You know, we'll see how this goes this weekend. This is the Rise Up Seaward podcast. That's Brian Manning. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seaward podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.